Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
He's coming back from the offside position, but Shane Long was definitely onside. Shane Long!
A very good morning to you. I'm Reggie Corrigan and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Well, another packed show for you this week. We'll be catching up with Stephen O'Brien from the UK Packers on both last weekend's and this weekend's action in the NFL, and he'll be giving us his acca for week four. Just 3 out of 5 last week, but he did tell us it was a little bit risky in places, so we'll forgive him for that. In racing, glad to say we'll have Leon Blanche from Boyle Sports giving us the rundown on this weekend's action in Paris-Longchamp and Newmarket. He'll also be giving us his lucky 15 for this week. And in snooker, Ken is going to be joining us from Milton Keynes for all the latest on the Snooker Championship League over there, and he did well himself. He's top of his group at this stage, which is good for him. So we'll be catching up with Ken just before the 10 o'clock news. And in rugby, Will Slattery, journalist of course of the Irish Independent, will be discussing all the latest rugby news. Last night's matches in the Pro 14, which returned of course, and the rest of the action for this weekend as well, not to mention some goings on at international level too, as we start to get ready for Six Nations that's coming down the road. They had a very strange time of year. We'll also be talking to Declan Drake to recap on last weekend's win for Ballymun Kickhams in the Senior Club Football Championship Final. And also, Declan has an exclusive interview with the new Dublin GA chairman, Mick Sievers, on the future structure and schedule of club and inter-county finals. Looking forward to that one. And after another good win last night for Rovers and Dundalk's great action during the week, Alan Cawley will be on at the end of the show to talk to us about all of that and the chances Dundalk, and of course the slight mouth-watering possibility that we could get to see some fans in the stadium for that Arsenal game in December, which would be amazing if we can do that. Of course, we have our magic moment in sport as well, just after 10 o'clock, with the transfer window shutting on Monday. The major moment in sport this week is focusing on the most memorable last-minute deals and transfers in the past. We'll remember back to Robbie Keane's move from Leeds to Spurs on deadline day in 2002. So we want to hear from you. You can let us know your thoughts on that magic moment and anything else that's going on in the show. You can get in touch with us by texting us on 087 11 55 777. And of course, we're on Facebook, Dublin's Talking Sport, Twitter at Sport 1068, and Instagram, Dublin's Talking Sport 1068. Well, joined, of course, as always, in studio here by Blaine. Good morning, Blaine. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie. How are you getting on?
I'm getting on great, actually. Yeah, it's a little bit duller than it was last week. It was a bit brighter in here. It's starting to feel a little bit wintry as we come into October. All of a sudden, where did the last 6 months go? But yeah, there you go.
It's getting dark, Reggie, isn't that it? Driving in today, you're like, Jesus.
I know, it dark, definitely isn't it? Is. And there was a chill in the air too, but there's plenty of football and sport going on this weekend to keep us occupied and keep us entertained. What have you got in the papers? What's jumping out at you?
Well, we'll start off, we will, with last night's action in the League of Ireland, Reg. So Jack Byrne scored one and set up another in Shamrock Rovers 4-0 demolition of Sligo Rovers yesterday. And it takes them now 11 points clear at the top of the table, Reggie. So they've got one hand on that trophy, they do. And it's looking more and more likely that Shamrock Rovers is going to run away with it, aren't they?
Yeah, they're not slipping up in any way, shape or form. Yeah, as you mentioned, Byrne making a case for himself yet again. I suppose there's a great headline in the Indo today talking about Kenny's waiting game, with that game coming up on Thursday. It's a kind of a nervy time as he kind of watches the likes of Doherty and Hendrick and Stevens and Hourihan and Robinson and all these players trying to make some sort of an impression this weekend as to whether or not they can get back into Kenny's squad for Thursday. Even people like Darren Randolph, who isn't getting too many starts at the moment, he's on the bench this weekend, I think. So these are the types of things that Kenny has to weigh up as he waits for that crucial game. And of course, it is coming to be a crucial game on Thursday night for the New Ireland manager. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
Absolutely.
I'll have a chat with Alan Cawley later on as well to get his thoughts on that. But yes, Shamrock Rovers doing the business and staying well in front, not allowing any slip-ups at this stage. Good to see.
Absolutely, yeah. And, yeah, and then next we have got... Derry won 2-0, they did, against Waterford at home yesterday. Two Connor Clifford penalties yesterday too, so excellent. That's a good result as well for Derry.
Good stuff. Yeah, absolutely. Plenty going on across the water as well, of course. As we mentioned there, there's plenty of moving around, but Ole Gunnar has kind of done a little bit of a U-turn on the stance that United needed to add depth, and saying that the squad would be strong enough now. I think he's starting to run to the hills and say, give me some players.
That's a bit worrying now to hear Reggie, isn't it? Saying the U-turn, it's a bit worrying there, yeah. Reggie, because you're thinking, doing a U-turn now and saying, my squad is good enough to compete for the title. I'm sorry, I don't know why he's even saying that. It's a little bit delusional to say, but absolutely not. I'm worrying to think that maybe he didn't get the backing to actually sign some of these players. I think, obviously, Jadon Sancho has been their number one target for the whole summer. And it just looks more and more likely that he was, you know, going to stay at Dortmund. And now I think Ole is kind of trying to cover himself, going, do you know what? I think our team is strong enough, and I'm sorry, an awful lot of people are going to disagree with you, Ole. Your team is not strong enough.
Yeah, there's something else going on there. There's no question about it. And it would be very interesting to get the thoughts of Alan Cawley on that a little bit later on. I wanted to mention as well, of course, Dundalk. The group has been announced for Dundalk. It's
absolutely
a really interesting looking group that they're getting.
Oh, I'm very excited, Reggie, as you were talking about earlier on. Not trying to be biased at all, but oh my goodness, am I excited to see Arsenal come to Dundalk and play Dundalk in Ireland. And I, as you were saying, Reggie, as well, I'm hoping that some fans are going to get to be in the stadium.
I don't know. The way things are going, unfortunately, we might have to hold off on it. If they do, the tickets will be like hen's teeth, because it'll be a very, very limited number of people that do get to go to it. But it's just amazing for Dundalk.
So good.
Giovagnoli being extended the contract, and I'm sure plenty of talks going on behind the scenes there. But it was a really good achievement. I mean, you know, Rapid Vienna as well, and Molde, it's going to be... tough group, but that's what they want, and a huge payday as well for
absolutely
them,
you know? And do you know what, as well, I wouldn't be counting them out just yet. Do you know what, I'm looking and thinking, you look at teams like Arsenal and all that, and when they play, come up against teams like Dundalk, they play their B team, they play their academy, and I'm telling you, Dundalk, they're going to take their opportunity against teams like Arsenal, against teams like Rapid Vienna, and I'm honestly thinking there's going to be some fantastic results for Dundalk in this group.
Absolutely, well, let's hope you're right. I mean, it's certainly a very exciting thing, and something we'll all be looking forward to over the winter months, no question about it. In rugby as well, there's been some results from last night.
Absolutely. Great result anyway for Leinster, beating the Dragons by 35 points to 5, which is absolutely fantastic. A bit worrying scenes though, seeing Johnny Sexton limping off in the match, Reggie.
Yeah, it was. I mean, there's a couple of injury concerns. Certainly Andy Farrell is going to have to think about a few things, as that Six Nations, I can't even get used to saying it, as the Six Nations is coming up later on in the year rather than the beginning of the year. But anyway, there's certainly injury concerns that he's going to have to be worried about. I don't think the Sexton one is as serious, maybe, as might be thought. And I know Leo Cullen was kind of talking it off as saying, no, everything's going to be okay there. But, Knox to Porter and Deegan and Frawley as well. So, but it was interesting to see Leinster just in total command. I'll be talking to Will Slattery about that a little later in the show, to see them just, you know, I've said it many times, it's a little bit worrying for the league when one team seems to be as dominant as they are. And when you look at the Dragons team, sort of kind of, that don't think they have a whole lot more in the back to offer. So, getting hammered like that was worrying for the season that lies ahead for them. Ulster, they made a little bit of hard work about against the fixture against Benetton, but they got there in the end. So yep. A good 35-24 win for them over Benetton at Kingspan. But I think there are aspects of that game that they'll be worried about as well. And I'll be talking to Will about that later on. And just to mention as well, of course, that Munster do begin their season away to the Scarlets at 3 o'clock. A strong team picked there with the likes of CJ Stander and Tadhg Byrne. In that Pro 14 opener for them, and JJ Hanrahan is continuing out half, and Craig Casey replaces the injured Conor Murray at 9. What's happening? There's tennis going on, of course.
There is indeed. The French Open is on. So, Rafa Nadal won yesterday. He did his match and he's going on to the third round now. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, we know Nadal and how good he is on the French Open and the clay court. So, we're not really expecting any different from Nadal. And then we've got men's top seed Novak Djokovic playing in the third round today against Daniel Alahi Galan from Colombia.
Yeah. Mm. Perfect. It'll be interesting to see it. Djokovic, he just is a machine. There's no question about it. Plenty going on there in that. In Gaelic Games, unfortunately, the Armagh footballers have suspended training after a number of the squad have tested positive for COVID-19. Worrying things going on around the country again in terms of the case numbers rising and teams testing. It's inevitable that that will happen as we start to open up a little bit. But a little bit of worry going on there around that. I'll be talking to Declan Drake, of course, after 10 o'clock on all of the GAA and get a little bit of notice on him about that and get the thoughts around the board on what's happening with that. Anything else stand out to you at the moment?
Nothing actually, Reggie. Okay. No, nothing.
Time to turn our attention now to the NFL, and I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Stephen O'Brien of the UK Packers.co.uk. Morning, Stephen. How are you?
Morning, Reg. I am good.
That's good to hear. I'm very glad to hear that. Yeah, it's been an interesting, busy week. Plenty going on right across the board, but last week, you did preface your prediction by saying that there are going to be a few underdogs and back them at your will. But it wasn't your underdogs that let you down. It was your kind of locks that didn't do it when the Chargers and the Falcons let us down a little bit.
They did it again, Rich. I mean, this is every season now. You know,
we'll just go with the underdogs from now on and just pick them.
Yeah, just say put £100 down and the underdogs will come out like paying your mortgage. But yeah, look, it's NFL. It's any given Sunday. Yeah. It was annoying, though, because... And this is the thing, is that I picked, and I call them underdogs because they were bookies underdogs. It's, you know, I was going around looking at all the networks and I always consult all of the, in quotation marks, experts when I'm pulling up my picks. And I'll go against them from time to time. Some of them I'd agree with that they're locks when you look at all of the sort of background metrics or whatever. But I picked the Saints to lose against the Packers, which they did. But the Saints hadn't lost something like 8 games in a row in Sunday Night Football. But the Packers go in and look amazing. And then the Chiefs, they come up against the LA Chargers the week before and they just about nipped it at the end of the game. And people are like, oh, that shows a weakness in the armor. And so they picked the Ravens in that game. But I went to Chiefs and that came through. But the LA Chargers end up getting beaten. And I wouldn't mind, look, so we lost 2 on the ACA, not to go on about it, right? Like that guy who sort of rambles on when he makes a mistake. But the LA Chargers, so they have a rookie guy in. That's the story we talked about last week where Tyrod Taylor gets his lung punctured by the doctor and then Justin Herbert comes in and plays a stormer. So he came in and played a stormer, made some rookie mistakes, and I sort of went against the Panthers because their star player was out and it kind of bore through. So what ended up happening was is that they could only kick field goals, the Panthers, and so it looked like the Chargers were still in it. It came down to the last play of the game, Reg, and it was designed where Justin Herbert had to peg the ball down the field. Keenan Allen was to catch it, which he did. And then he could lateral the ball, which means, you see, in NFL, there's a misconception that you can only throw the ball forward and that's the play over when whatever that happens. But you can actually keep throwing the ball backwards once you catch it. So he did that to Eckler. And Eckler could literally just have walked into the end zone for the win. And that would have came in with a racket and happy days. Mm. But all of a sudden, he made this dodgy throw and then they end up losing the game. But that's the problem with the NFL, really, is you think you have locks on and then it doesn't happen. But is this the part where we talk about the Falcons, Reg? Do we want to go there again this week?
Yeah. 98% win probability.
Yeah. I mean, how incredible is that? So this is the game. I think this was on before the other game. So I was watching this and they keep a close eye on the ACA because I want to make sure we all come out with a nice few bob. So I was looking at this one and they were up. It was, 26-10, and there was only like 6 minutes left in the game. And it could have been higher than that. It could have been 29-10 because they had a 48-yard field goal as well, and they missed it. But as you say, 98% win probability. That's when I sort of turn off the telly, go out and make myself a cup of tea, the light is. But there's 6 minutes left on the play clock. The Bears are down 16 points. which is really a three-score game. You know, to score two touchdowns and a field goal, if you want to be clever with it and try to do the two-point conversions after the touchdown, it's a two-score game, but that's dodgy because they never usually work. But the Bears go down, get a touchdown. Still 4 minutes left. They're still down 14 points, and I'm still sipping the tea, thinking everything's fine. And then the Bears go in with an absolutely ridiculous touchdown. I mean, the ball is thrown to Robinson, and there's a guy on him straight away, and he tackles him, and Robinson just shakes him off and goes into the end zone. And then they go and they score the game-winning touchdown. The Falcons still have a bit of time. But again, Matt Ryan just gets intercepted in the end, and they lose again. And massive, like, it's unbelievable. They're setting records, Reg, in all of the wrong parameters.
For losing.
The team is, you know, they're up like 2-3 scores.
That's incredible. 16 points with 6 minutes on the clock. And I know 6 minutes on a clock in NFL is a very long time. It's a bit like hurling, you know, a lot can happen in the last 2 or 3 minutes. But still, it's a terrible crumbling is the only word you can use for the Falcons.
Yeah, well, the shocking part about it, Reggie, is that it's indicative of what's going on in the game prior to that. So, like, we should be talking about, because we're up against the Bears, we should be talking about how bad the Bears were and the fact that they benched their starting quarterback. But the Falcons are so bad that we're talking about the Falcons instead of the sort of existential crisis the Bears find themselves for trading up for Trubisky all those years ago, thinking he was the man. You know, signing Nick Foles or gaining Trubisky in training camp, that no, he's their starting quarterback. And then they have to bench him. He's the talisman of your offense. He's the face of the franchise. And then all of a sudden you're putting him on the bench like he's been a bowl boy and bringing in Nick Foles. And then Nick Foles, I would say, got the business done, but he really didn't. The problem here is the Falcon defense can't stop anything and they crumbled at the end of the game. The offense, you'd expect to go out and run down that play clock by doing running plays and running down. They couldn't even do that. And then they give up easy touchdowns. And then the play calling as well, Reg, was terrible. So the one to come out worse than all of this is Dan Quinn, which is the head coach of Atlanta. And he's on the hot seat now. And one bad game, again, particularly in this fashion where they crumble late, is really going to put him in the hot seat if he's not out. So all eyes are on that Packers-Falcons game on Monday Night Football, because that could be his last game for sure.
Okay. I see also NFL not dodging this COVID bullet either. We got Manny here. We got the likes of the Armagh GAA team. We've got rugby teams. I see Sale over in the UK. The Gallagher Premiership is in the final is in jeopardy. And the Steelers-Titans game is postponed as well after the Titans players and staff have tested positive for COVID-19. What happens with that? Like with those games, when this happens, I'm just conscious of the season and timescales and everything else. Are the points forfeited or will they replay the game?
They replay the game, so they push it forward to week 7. So every team, like, thankfully for the NFL, everyone has a bye week at a certain stage. So what they've done is they've just said, right, lads, your bye week is come early, which isn't ideal because these teams plan around their bye weeks in certain ways and training schedules, and sometimes they have injuries and the bye week helps the lads get healthy. Yeah, it's really concerning on the Reds because, I mean, look, every sport is effectively a contact sport, even soccer, when it shouldn't be, right? You know, like, everyone gets close. And with this game, I mean, you have the big boys in the trenches. They're literally putting their hands on each other the whole time. The only way you can put someone down is wrapping your arms around and putting them on the ground by and large. So this is really concerning. Now, they came up against the Vikings, the Titans did, and a little bit of a backstory. They had five players and six staff earlier in the week that tested positive. And so now we all know the whole spiel, you know, it could be 2 weeks before you can show and all of this type of stuff. Now, the players and personnel and media personnel are all tested every single day. So if you want to be a guy who's a reporter, you've got to go and get tested every day. I had Rob Domofsky on the UK Packers podcast during the week, and he was talking about it, is that they can't get anywhere close. And even then, they have proximity trackers. Yeah. So if you get too close to someone, you have this beeper thing going off. It's like microchipping a dog sometimes.
Yeah.
So it's really concerning. The Vikings, who they played, they have all negative tests. So they've allowed their game to go ahead, but that could be the problem. So they could come up against, I think it's the Texans, and then, you know, it's a lag, so then they test positive, so that the Texans. And if it starts to spiral out of control, because they keep letting these teams play against each other.
It's very worrying, as you say, Stephen, when these guys are getting tested to the level that they are. You know, I mean, every single day they're getting tested. I assume these are rapid tests that are giving them results immediately within the matter of hours that allows everything to continue on, yet it's still finding its way in. So even with testing, it's getting in, and you're kind of going, geez, how are things going to progress if even when negative tested people are still transmitting this thing? It's really weird.
that's the freak out, Reg, because what they've done is they've sent investigators down to Tennessee. They're not allowing them back in the building, and they're trying to figure out, exactly like you say, how in the world did this happen? Because they've decreased all of the personnel that have been around the team, and anybody who is has to follow really, really strict protocols. They've spent an unbelievable amount of money retrofitting the stadiums to allow different personnel groups to be in different rooms, in different parts of the building, when ordinarily they would be in the one. So that's where they don't understand, like you said, how this is after eking its way in. And you look at the likes of the Packers, they're in Wisconsin, and Brown County, where they're based, is one of the worst places in the state for COVID. So they're freaking out about that it could get in, but it hasn't yet in Green Bay. So how it got in Tennessee, that's what they need to get to the bottom of. Was someone a bowl boy now and went and had contact with someone? And again, I would imagine there'd be heavy fines or some action brought down on that person, because there's a lot of money at stake and they can't afford this.
Yeah, because if you look at the NBA and the bubbles they created, we don't have that bubble with NFL, though, should we? Don't players are still free to go back and forth. Yeah,
exactly. The only thing is, on their bye week, they're not allowed to go off on holidays, obviously, or go anywhere else, just to stay around the facility and all that. So yeah, I mean, and often these players are making massive sacrifices. The players have talked about it, where they're at home playing Xbox with the other players, you know, and they're not allowed to socialise or do anything. So yeah, there's nothing to really upset people if this gets out.
Yeah, I've got to watch it carefully. Ron Rivera, the head coach of Washington, he's battling cancer, but he's still coaching away.
Yeah, and this is the thing, and this is the point. So Ron Rivera, he has what's called squamous cell carcinoma. It's not supposed to be life-threatening if it's treated early, and they've said it's very treatable and curable. But again, he's of an advanced age, and he has cancer. So when you are dealing with a COVID environment as well, I mean, if you talk about a guy who's extremely high risk, it's going to be Ron Rivera. But incredible. I mean, this guy, he was obsessed like anybody would be with a horrendous sort of diagnosis like that. He's trying to remain positive. But what he was saying was, he felt in, you know, the fittest stage of his life, he felt he was super healthy. And then all of a sudden he gets hit with this diagnosis. But he's, you know, you could probably get the ordinary person, because you're knocked down by the treatments and stuff like that. You'd sort of want to rest. And the doctors told him, if you can go on, try to go on and, you know, keep life kind of as normal as possible. And he's doing that. But we've seen it really hit him because he sat out of summer practice on Thursday. And, you know, we have another coach coming in and taking over from him. So he's still powering on. But it's an incredible story, really, Reg, because what he's doing is he's getting, you know, chemotherapy in between games. He's flying into the cities before or after the team. He's doing press conferences and saying, look, I need to actually fly off now and get treatment. So he's literally speaking to the press for 20 minutes. And he's all dressed out, ready to get on the plane to fly out and get treatment again. And he's getting IVs at halftime to try to give him the strength to go on. So a really brave face for a franchise that has just been mired in controversy. This is the Washington football team. They had to take the Redskins off the name because it was deemed as racist. Yes. One of their sponsors, and that was all pushed by their sponsors, by the way. It was FedEx who said, we don't feel comfortable sponsoring anymore if you have that name. You know, and this is a campaign that's been going on for decades now to try to get the name removed. And then you had all of these, I won't get into too much about it on radio because I can't. It's really distasteful stuff of what's going on behind the scenes in Washington with harassment, and all of that came out. And then there's the quarterback controversy there. So here's a guy who's head coach of a team who's just been mired in controversy and change, and yet he's battling this cancer diagnosis and taking IVs and still, you know, staying very, very brave in the face of danger.
Very brave man, no question about it. Yeah, let's hope and wish him the best and hope that he can come through the other side of it. Okay, let's have a look at the week ahead, week four games. What's your pick of the games this week?
Right, I'll hit you with the ACA. I'm not going to say any of them are locks because they're the ones going to give us a kick. So it's a 3.5-1 odds, 5 down, 22 back. So I'm going with the Ravens to beat the Washington football team, the Indianapolis Colts to beat the Chicago Bears, the Buffalo Bills to beat the Las Vegas Raiders, the Bills quarterback. Here's a guy, we'll probably talk about him next week if he wins, right? So here's a guy who's lighting the league on fire, but no one's talking about him. But anyway, and then the Arizona Cardinals then to beat the Carolina Panthers.
Excellent stuff. Okay, it's a good looking ACA. Okay, I see on Tuesday, of course, your own Packers are taking on the Falcons. That must be a lock at this stage now, the way the Falcons are going.
I tell you what, you think so, right? And that's what even Blaine was saying, you know, sort of before coming on, he's like, just don't go for the Falcons against Steve, will you? He's just thinking about the heartbreak, it's unbelievable. And that's the way it is. But look, do you know what? They're coming into Lambeau. That doesn't really have a home field advantage. And you would expect the Packers to win, Reg, but they've gone, their second wide receiver has gone down. They're already without Devontae Adams, who's their superstar wide receiver. Alan Lazard really suddenly went in and got surgery. So now we're kind of without wide receivers, but I would expect Matt LaFleur, head coach, to do something really inventive there, and they're still the favourites to win in that game. If you want to add it to your ACA, you do. I don't have it in mind because I'm not going anywhere near a Falcons game this season. But yeah, it's going to be an exciting game if you're willing to stay up late, that is.
Okay, see, there's a good one there on Sunday as well with the Patriots taking on the Chiefs.
Yeah, a great game. I mean, that's going to be a real acid test game because the Chiefs, you know, stumbled against the Chargers seemingly, went out and blew the Ravens out of it. And then you have the Patriots again. The thing is, the real acid test this is for the Patriots. If they can beat the Chiefs, well, then they kind of look legit. They've done pretty well. Belichick, in fairness to him, and he's a master coach and surrounds him with masterful people, and he had the dynasty and all of that sort of played out stuff. But this game weirdly sort of lends itself into the Patriots' strengths against the Chiefs' weaknesses. They're pretty bad on run defense, where the Patriots are pretty strong in that regard. So this could be a sneaky bet if you wanted it to go for the Patriots over the Chiefs. But I will say, I'll never bet against the Chiefs, because what Patrick Mahomes is able to do, particularly late in games, is just sensational. I mean, the guy is absolutely unstoppable. But as you say, that is a really intriguing matchup, because the Cam Newton versus Patrick Mahomes matchup, the two sort of mobile quarterbacks, and Belichick. Belichick, you see what he does, Reg, as well, is he'll wax lyrical about who the best player on the opposing team is. Mm. And you know that once he does that, he's going to completely shut him down the next game. So he'll do that. He'll beat up the players and then beat them. So yeah, that's definitely one to watch.
And then finally, the other one on Sunday that caught my eye was the Browns at Dallas.
Yeah, Dallas, a really weird team. They've brought every game that's really, really exciting. And the Cleveland Browns, everyone's kind of written them off already. And I saw this thing, some lad released a video saying, oh, Baker Mayfield for the Browns, put him down for MVP. And you're like, no, not really. Yeah. So yeah, you'd expect the Dallas to sort of bounce back there. Another good one actually is the Seahawks versus Miami. Because Russell Wilson, he's already stamped his name on the MVP race. I mean, this is a guy, he's thrown 14 touchdowns in 3 weeks. He's been so good. No one's talking about Lamar Jackson for the Ravens or Patrick Mahomes for the Chiefs. So he's doing really, really well. And they haven't got much of a defense to keep letting stuff up. So again, if you get a chance to watch Russell Wilson too, because he's even better. And as well as that, if I can quickly say, if anyone wants to watch DK Metcalf's botched non-touchdown run, so Russell Wilson throws the ball to him and he sort of half celebrates, puts the ball in one hand and is strolling in and gets the ball bashed out before he gets into the end zone. It's always a fun watch as well, but that's your homework for this week.
Yeah, I'll definitely give that a look. One of those moments that he'll probably want to forget. Okay, Stephen, as always, fantastic talking to you, and we'll catch up with you again next week.
Cheers, Reg.
Thanks. That's Stephen O'Brien there of the UKPackers.co.uk. And for any NFL fans out there, an absolutely great podcast every week. Great website as well. The Packers, of course, being their main team, but they cover everything. So, as I said, for NFL fans, a really good one to catch up on. And his anchor for this week, for those of you who like to follow it, I know so many of you do, he's going for Baltimore to beat the Washington football team, as they're known now. The Indianapolis Colts, of course, against the Chicago Bears. The Buffalo Bills against the Las Vegas Raiders. And the Arizona Cardinals to beat the Carolina Panthers. We'll put that up on our Facebook page as well for any of you that missed out. And it's time to turn our attention now to horse racing. Delighted to be joined on the line by Boyle Sports Leon Blanche. Good morning, Leon. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie. How are you keeping, buddy?
I'm very well, thanks a lot. Great to have you back on. It's been a kind of a strange time, as we keep saying, in sport, but indeed in horse racing too. Having to battle on all fronts to keep the show going and doing so very well, but it's still feeling a little bit, just a little bit strange is the way I describe it at the minute.
Yeah, look, it is, Reggie. It's, you know, I was looking up to be in Listowel for the Harvest Festival. We were doing a bit of work with TG Cahir down there. And look, there was two owners per horse permitted in, which was great to see the owners come back, because they're the ones who keep the sport really going. If there's no owners, there's no sport. So it was great to see them back on the racetrack. But still, the atmosphere is normally buzzing down in County Kerry for that big race of the week, which is the Kerry National on the Wednesday. But it was just a bit of a surreal feeling. But I think from racing's perspective, the show is on the road. Owners are getting back in. Hopefully we'll get some more people back in sooner rather than later. But in terms of HRI and the IHRB, they're doing everything in their power to try and keep the show going. They're doing that very successfully. And the prize money has to be applauded, in terms of when you look at the difference between the prize money in Ireland against over in the UK, certainly Irish racing is far ahead in terms of what they're offering for the big races over here in Ireland, which is great to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you should we should reiterate what you said about HRI, because, I mean, when you look at other sports, I was just talking to Stephen there about NFL. We're looking at the situation with Armagh. We're looking across the water at Manet. We're looking at rugby, the Premier League over there, all these outbreaks and everything else. It's so hard to control, and they're doing an amazing job with all the checks that they're doing. So, yeah, as I said, tip the hat. I mean, you're always going to get the occasional situation, but they've done great to keep the show on the road, no question about it.
Yes, you really have. Yeah, agree really with that, Reggie.
Okay, what was I going to say? Yeah, we'll move on. So to this weekend, obviously, Group 1-wise, we're looking at Newmarket, and there's Cork as well on Saturday.
Yeah, look, I mean, there's a it's a fabulous weekend of racing. We'll talk about Longchamp tomorrow in a couple of moments, but I think Newmarket kind of kicks it off today. And, I mean, there's two fantastic Irish fillies are going to take each other on in the Group 1 at a quarter to three. You've got Champers Elise, which is a tremendous story, Reggie. The training performance from Johnny Murtha to bring this filly from winning, I think it was a handicap first time out, all the way back. I think it was in, she won her median auction race back at the Curra at the back end of September last year, to actually culminating in winning a Group 1 on Irish Champions weekend at Leopardstown when she won the Coolmore Matron Stakes. An unbelievable training performance from Johnny Murtha to bring this filly all the way along. And she takes on Peaceful, who, of course, was the winner of the Irish 1,000 Guineas. She was having her first run back after having a break after the French Oaks, where she finished second. But Peaceful was second to Champers Elise at Leopardstown. And I just have a feeling this Group 1 in Newmarket at a quarter to three today, I think it's going to be between these two fantastic fillies. One is trained by Aidan O'Brien. One is trained by Johnny Murtha. Ryan Moore rides Peaceful. Colin Keane rides Champers Elise. It's really set up, Reggie, to be a heavyweight ding-dong. Mm. These two fillies are superstars. I'm just going to give slight preference for Peaceful because I think she will have come on a little bit from that run at Leopardstown, having had a bit of a mid-season break. So for me, Peaceful to win the Group 1 at a quarter to three.
Yeah, with Aidan O'Brien, of course, being the trainer there, I can see why you're leaning that way, but you've certainly teed it up nicely, I have to say, Leon. It sounds like a mouth-watering prospect, so we'll keep an eye on that one. What else have we got?
Yeah, look, Reg, you know what? Tipperary today hosts a Group 3 race, and look, it's a competitive affair. Albina, on her best form as a two-year-old, she would pick these up and carry them. Huh. But she just hasn't been as good as she was last year, for sure. Like, she was a little bit disappointing, I felt, at Leopardstown when she could only finish fifth in that aforementioned race, the Matron Stakes. So maybe she can bounce back. She's dropping down in class significantly from Group 1 to Group 3, and that should be taken into consideration. But there's a horse that's definitely on the improve, and again, a trainer who's done a remarkable job with this fella is Aidan McGuinness. Trains Current Option. He won a couple of races in Galway. He won on the 2nd of August, which was a very competitive handicap. Then he stepped up in class and won a listed race at Cork on the 8th of August. And this horse, you can forgive him for his last run. Things didn't go right at Mace. But I think if things go right here today, I think this horse could run a huge race. Current Option at around about 5-1. He's a cracking each way bet, Reggie. I cannot see him being out of the first three at 225. Also, we're going to have a look at tomorrow's card in Longchamp. It is, of course, the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe. And for me, it's a little bit of a disappointment that Love is not running. I can understand the ground has gone against her. It's going to be quite testing ground tomorrow. We were all looking forward to watching Enable take on the young pretender, the English Guineas winner, the English Oaks winner, the Yorkshire Oaks winner, Love. I thought if Love had taken part on good to soft ground, she would have been very hard to beat getting that three-year-old allowance. However, she doesn't run tomorrow. Enable is a very warm order favourite, and she hasn't done anything wrong this year, Reggie, but I just wonder, she's getting older, and John Gosden, this is her race. She's been trained all year for this race. Nothing else mattered. She won the King George. She was second in the Eclipse. And she won a Group 3 just to get her ready for this contest. This is the day. This will be her final swing song. It would be fantastic for racing if she could do it. She probably will, but she's no value. And the horse I think that could outrun his odds is the English Derby winner, Serpentine. Mm-hmm. Everybody said, oh, it was a fluke of a Derby. It was a 25-1 chance. He won when he went in the front with a brilliant ride from Emmett McNamara. He was fourth in Longchamp the last day, Reggie, but they changed tactics with him. They held him up a little bit. Christophe Soumillon, who rode him that day, is going to ride him tomorrow in the Arc. He knows what it takes. And I would not be surprised at all, Reg, if they go back to the front running tactics that they used in the Epsom Derby. And at 12-1, I just think Serpentine is a big each-way bet. I'm not saying he's definitely going to beat the favourite, mm-hmm. because she merits being favourite. But you're not going to get any value backing Enable. And yeah. I just think Serpentine each-way could be a big price in the Prix de l'Arc. And finally, the last one for the Lucky 15, I'm going to go for the Dermot Weld filly, Tarnawa, in the Prix de l'Opera at 10-4 at Longchamp tomorrow afternoon. She was so impressive winning at Cork. Then she went over to France and she won on the same day that Serpentine finished fourth. She won a Group 1. She's running in the Prix de l'Opera tomorrow. I think this Aga Khan filly is just progressing. And that's what you want with a filly at this time of year. Ones that keep getting their head in front and they just do not know how much they can keep on improving. She's with a master trainer with Dermot Weld. And I think Tarnawa could land the spoils in the Prix de l'Opera at 10-4 tomorrow afternoon.
Excellent stuff. Just run through that Lucky 15 for me again, if you don't mind, Leon.
Okay, no problem, Reggie. So we're going to go. The first one is at 2.25 today. It's going to be current option. The second one is going to be at 2.45 at Newmarket Peaceful. Then we're going to switch over to Longchamp tomorrow. Serpentine in the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe and Tarnawa in the Prix de l'Opera, which is at 10-4. There's some good value. Go to nice each way, Lucky 15 for the four horses.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Okay, that sounds fantastic, Leon. We'll certainly have a look at that. And of course, it is De Tory's swan song with Enable as well, that partnership that's gone on for so long. So, although, yeah. as you say, there's challenges there. I'm sure a lot of people, the romantics, would probably like to see Enable win that with De Tory on board.
You certainly would, Reggie. I mean, you've hit the nail on the head there because, look, she's been an absolute superstar. Yeah. She really has. She's one of the best racehorses that we'll probably ever see. And it would be a fitting tribute to her, to her jockey, to her trainer, to her owner, if she could win her third Prix de l'Arc. I mean, let's put this into perspective. She should have won three last year. The Tory held his hands up. He probably pressed the button a bit too soon. But she's won two already, and she's now going for number three. It would be a remarkable story if she could win back her Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe crown tomorrow afternoon.
Absolutely. Okay, Leon, appreciate it again. Great chatting to you. And we'll catch up with you again very soon.
Take care, Reggie.
Thanks a lot. That's Leon Blanche there from Boyle Sports, of course, giving us all of his thoughts on that. Horse racing for this weekend, plenty going on, no question about it. We've got Tipperary, Gorham Park, Killarney is on board, and of course, across the water then, you're looking at the likes of Wolverhampton, Fontwell and Newcastle as well, or Newmarket, I should say, as well. So, but the big one tomorrow, as everyone's going to be looking at, of course, is Longchamp, and the big one with Enable, I suppose, and Frankie De Tory, as I said, the romantic partnership of those two and the years that they put in together. And I suppose many people feel that Enable was the horse that brought Frankie's career back to life after he went through a little bit of a rocky spell, let's say, in around 2012. So Enable was the horse that put him back on track. And Leon's Lucky 15 for this weekend. I know many of you wanting to hear that. He's gone with current option in the 225, peaceful in the 245 to get one over on Champs-Élysées. Serpentine then a 12-1 shot, and Tarnawa makes up the fourth in that Lucky 15. We'll get that up on our Facebook page as well. Now, delighted to be joined on the line by our own Ken. Good morning, Ken. How are things over in Milton Keynes?
Morning, Reg. How are you? I'm good, thanks. Still in lockdown, but we're okay here. There's tests going on left, right and centre, but I'm COVID-free for the moment, thankfully.
That's for sure, and not only COVID-free, surviving on all of those meals you're putting up on Instagram that are arriving up to your room.
They've got a lot better. I tell you, they've certainly improved over the last since the summer, since we first got here. But we've been treated to buffet
now, which is great, you know.
Well, with all due respect, Ken, they needed to. That's for sure. The first stuff you were tweeting out wasn't the best.
I'm delighted to get buffet food rather than food in a bag, like, you know. So,
absolutely.
Big changes.
Excellent. Okay, well, look, the Champions League has got well and truly underway. It's a huge league. It goes on from 13th of September right the way until the end of October, so like it's a long 6 week period. But you yourself, you're topping the table there in group 17 with 7 points from your 3 matches played so far. Well done.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I played Neil Robertson, Andrew Higginson, and Ian Shiras during the week, and topped the group, so I'm into the next stage. Only one qualifies. There's 32 groups of 4, 28 players. So 32 winners into the next stage, and they go into 8 groups, and then it goes down to 4 groups, and then down to the 1. So it's a great league. It's 4 frames. It's quite a quick shot frame snooker, but very exciting, I must say. And every sort of frame matters, and every match matters. It's always sort of prizes for points and stuff like that. So it's great. It's great. I was listening to Leon there talking about the race, and Matchroom and World Snooker are doing a tremendous job to keep snooker on the TV. We had the European Masters here last week. We'll have the English Open, not next week, the week after. So, and it's all here in Milton Keynes in the Marshall Arena and in the Milton Keynes Stadium here. So to keep it going, just like what they're doing with Irish racing, is just magnificent in these very difficult times.
Yeah, and of course, as you said, they're testing constantly the whole way through. There have been one or two positive tests.
We've had two positive tests. We had another one yesterday, and that was the same guy who tested positive at the European Masters.
So three
positive tests out of a possible, you know, since we've had a few tournaments, possible 2,000 when you include all the staff and all the cameramen and soundmen and everything. So two or three out of a possible couple of thousand tests, it's not too bad when you look at things. We've had one very unfortunate Chinese player yesterday, Li Peifan, who was due to play yesterday, came the day before, got tested. His test went off, came back inconclusive, so he wasn't allowed to play unless he got a negative test. But then he had to stay in the hotel, got a test on the next day, sent the test off, and his test was negative. So he was negative all the time. So he was very unlucky, couldn't play in the event. So.
You think
you're unlucky with the horses, Red?
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I don't go near them, because I put the kibosh on them for everybody else. But in terms of the logistics of it, I mean, when you talk about the numbers you've just mentioned there, all of those players are having to stay that length of time in the one area then. So you guys are kind of in hotels for that 6 week period
bubble. Well, when they're playing here, so they come the day before and then they play. This tournament. These sort of matches, they're group matches, only go on for one day. You know, I'm here for the whole week because I'm filling in with the commentary as well.
Yes.
But you're in a bubble, basically. So you just have the corridor to the breakfast and dining area, and then from there to the practice area, and then to the match area. So, and they're the only court. You can't go outside the hotel. You can't go outside your corridor. So it's only from the bedroom to where the actual play is started. So you're kept in a bubble, which is fair enough, because you're not going outside, you're not mixing, so you can't sort of get infected and bring the infection in and infect others, you know.
Well, I mean, it's just, I'm thinking for the Chinese players and all the other foreign players who have to quarantine and do everything else, even with travel, they're just basically having to live there for the
most of the players on tour now, even the Chinese players, they've all come back from China and are staying in the UK somewhere, you know. So there's no travel. You can't travel to China now at the moment. So I don't know what's going to bear for the new year when, you know, we're supposed to have like 3 or 4 tournaments in China. So we'll have to wait and see what developments will come. I mean, talking to the other Chinese players, he said everything is okay in Shanghai and Beijing. Everything back to normal. Restaurants open. There's nothing going on over there. It's just the restrictions are all over here.
It's a strange world at the moment, no question about it. I know you're keeping an eye on things here as well while you're over there. Just wanted to chat about Dundalk. Fantastic work during the weekend.
What a result. Absolutely brilliant. Over the moon, you know, to get into that. And it's a great money spinner for them, you know, and I'm sure it's well needed as well. But what a fantastic result, and absolutely chuffed for them. Brilliant, absolutely.
And
brilliant.
The draw so good as well. I mean, it'd be great if we could get some people in to the Aviva, maybe to see these games. It'd be amazing.
Oh, it would be, yeah, it would be. But it's great for Irish soccer, it gives a boost for all the other clubs as well. When you see your neighbours doing it, it gives you a great boost to try and emulate what they're achieving. And Dundalk have been brilliant over the last few years, and even since when Stephen Kenny has left, I know they're still a little bit behind the Rovers in the league.
Yeah.
but it's fantastic run so far, and hopefully they'll keep it going.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, hopefully you keep it going over there as well. When's your next match next week?
So we have a break now. The matches are still going on till Monday. Then we have a break for a week, and then we have the English Open, and then we're back again for October the 26th for the next round of the Championship League.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, we'll keep an eye on that. Best of luck with it, and we'll catch up with you again next week.
Yeah, absolutely, Reg.
Ken Doherty coming to us over from Milton Keynes, giving us all of the details on the snooker over there. Things still motoring away on that side of the world, as difficult as things are, but it's great to see that sport is doing all it can to keep going. Each week, we do like to look back at a magic moment in sport, and this week, of course, after 10 weeks of negotiations and deals in the football summer transfer window, it's officially shut and deadline day looming. On this week's Major Moment, we're looking back at some of the best deals that happened in the final day of transfer window. And on the 31st of August 2002, Tottenham Hotspur signed 22-year-old Irish striker Robbie Keane from Leeds for £7 million. At £7 million, the Republic of Ireland was an absolute steal, and he spent 9 years at White Hart Lane, scoring 122 goals in 303 appearances, which has ranked him among the top 10 goal scorers in Spurs history. Let's have a listen to some of those goals that Robbie scored.
Anderton, that's a nice little flick inside to Ledley King, who in turn launched it forward to Robbie Keane. Keane's through on goal. Robbie Keane gives Tottenham the lead on 28 minutes. He scores against his former employers, and as is his custom when he scores against his former club, he refuses to do his Colville celebration. Francesco, ball to the far post, there's Robbie Keane. That is 3-1. Robbie Keane volleys Tottenham into a 3-1 lead. What a great ball to Konchesky from Robbie Keane. There's Anderton in the middle. Is it going to be four? Finds head this Keane. Robbie Keane gets a hat-trick. It's 4-1 to Tottenham. And Robbie Keane completes a quite magnificent hat-trick.
Yes, indeed. And as I said, 122 goals during his time there. Money well spent. When you look at £7 million compared to what happens nowadays with the transfer windows, it really was a steal. Blaine, I mean, there's been, Sky have built it up into a whole thing, transfer deadline day, and there's 24 hours of coverage and all the rest of the rubbish that goes along with it. But there's been some interesting ones over the years as well in terms of deadline day transfers.
Yeah, and the ones that I can remember, Wayne Rooney back in 2004, signing for Manchester United from Everton, and he was the most expensive teenager at that time.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm to go to my own club, I can think of Mesut Ozil. I remember Ashley Cole leaving from Chelsea to Arsenal.
The Ozil one was £42 million, and there'll be many that'll think, my God, that was the most expensive mess. But I mean, there have been things that have gone well with Ozil, but like as you think back on it, that's probably a pretty big one, all right, that didn't quite work out, because you're going all the way back to 2013 for
that's
that one.
That's right. And even
it's huge.
Even looking at I know I'm being biased here as well, but even looking at our manager as well, I remember Mikel Arteta signing in 2011, and I was like, oh wow, what a deal.
Yeah,
but there million. Are some memorable transfers in the last day.
Yeah, no question about it. But Robbie Keane is our magic moment in sport for this week, and no doubt as you look at his career, 303 appearances for Spurs and 122 goals, £7 million really was pennies compared to what happens nowadays, and that's our magic moment. Okay, it's time to turn our attention now to the rugby, of course, and I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Will Slattery, journalist with the Irish Independent, but also of the Left Wing podcast. Morning, Will, how are you?
Hi, Reggie. Good, thanks. Nice to be back.
Great to have you back, I have to say. Great to have rugby back. Great to be back looking at all sports across the board. And kind of very weird as well to be back, in the sense that the 3 weeks after Leinster lifted the title, they were playing their first game last night, and not the toughest game. It kind of was story as usual, wasn't it?
Yeah, the season within a season kind of kicks off. And yeah, if you were going from Leinster Saracens and looking to see, how they bounce back,
seeing the fixture list revealed and the Dragons at the RDS was the first game. Wasn't exactly the best litmus test or maybe the most eye-catching game to kick off a season with. It's a funny one because the Dragons, to be fair to them, actually fielded probably the strongest team, arguably, that they've ever put out in the pro era. It just coincided with Leinster putting out their strongest team in this fixture for possibly one of the first times in a couple of years. So it was unlucky for them in that sense. You know, was there anything that jumped out at me last night? A couple of things, I guess, if you're going to pick through the game. You know, Hugo Keenan being moved to full-back and Larmer switching to the wing was interesting because, to be fair to Keenan, not only was he one of the best performers against Saracens in a team that overall was beaten in a lot of areas, he actually was very good in the air as well, I thought, that day, you know, in an area where Saracens were very strong, which shows that maybe he might be the answer to that conundrum for Leinster because Larmer, for all of the attacking talent, hasn't really convinced in some of the traditional full-back kind of areas that, you know, Rob Kearney, for instance, would have excelled in. So that was one area I thought was interesting. Keenan had a really good game again. Ryan Baird's performance was very good when he got involved. Like that try he scored at the very end when he shrugged off two or three tackles, you know, is definitely going to be one for the highlight reel. Besides that, it was kind of business as usual. Like Leinster won by 30 points. James Lowe scored another two tries. He's such an adept finisher. I think that makes 32 tries in about, what, three and a half seasons now. So, yeah, that's kind of what stood out for me, I guess. You know, there'll be a lot bigger tests to come. This is a pity for Leinster and maybe for Irish fans that we won't really see them tested in any great way, probably up until around Christmas time. But as it was, there was a couple of those, they were the things that I thought maybe were a bit interesting.
Is it a little bit worrying for the league to see that kind of trouncing already? As you said, I thought on paper it looked quite a strong Dragons team. I completely understand the power of Leinster and I get that, but I mean, as a competition with just the 12 teams, I know, talking to a lot of people during the week, they kind of can't wait now for these South African teams to come in just to make this competition something worth watching.
Yeah, well, definitely from a Leinster perspective, like it's almost like the perfect storm where you had like the Leinster strongest team being rolled out against the Dragons in the opening game. You know, if Leinster, say, put out the team they played in the corresponding fixture last year during the World Cup, it could well have been a very competitive, exciting match. But obviously, the strength of Leinster is that when they play pretty much every team in the league bar one or two, this sort of mismatch is possible. But I take your point that the league as a whole, you know, when you see that kind of fixture last night, you can be like, well, you know, it's not that strong of a league. But for instance, Munster Scarlets today, I was just looking at the team sheet, two locked and loaded teams. Like, that's going to be a really competitive, exciting game. And Munster, you know, have a lot to prove themselves. And if they get off to a losing start, you know, there's actually a lot on the line in a way there. Like, so I was actually pleasantly surprised when I looked through the team sheets for the weekend. Kind of Glasgow, similar story, two very strong teams out. Whereas, I guess, Leinster, it's kind of like maybe Dublin when you look at them and maybe the Leinster Football Championship.
Yeah.
If you took Dublin out of the Leinster Football Championship, it would be an extremely competitive provincial championship. Unfortunately, you can't really do that, and they're streets ahead, similar with Leinster. But, you know, when you look past Leinster, I know, you know, you're kind of clutching at straws maybe slightly because the league, you know, it needs to be competitive at the business end too, but I'm actually really looking forward to Munster Scarlets and Connacht Glasgow, two really strong teams out. You know, so I guess you look at it a couple of ways, and as you said, the South African teams will add something completely different when they come in. There's a few things to be ironed out there in terms of how it all works and fits together.
Yeah.
But yeah, that will certainly change things up and make it definitely more competitive in terms of winning the tournament.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a very valid point that you do make. You know, take Leinster out of the equation, then the games are very juicy and they are competitive. And as you mentioned, one I'm really, really looking forward to is the game today where Munster are away to the Scarlets, because the Scarlets are by far and away the best of the Welsh offering. As you said, two very strong teams. And, you know, I see Cian Tracy writes today as well in your own paper, The Independent, about the difficulty for Van Graan and make or break for Van Graan, and the point being that after 3 years of underperforming when it matters most, Munster's head coach is under pressure to deliver this season. So the South African is in his fourth campaign, and I have heard people asking the question, you know, why have we not seen more maybe of the influence of the likes of Larkham and Roundtree so far in what Munster are doing? People are wondering, do they have the personnel to do it in terms of players, or is it a coaching thing? So, I think exactly what you said there, it's the juiciest encounter of all is happening today with that Munster away to Scarlets game.
Yeah, and the piece you mentioned there, Keane Tracy's article in today's Irish Independent, I encourage any kind of rugby fan to pick it up, because it's a real kind of clear-eyed, objective look at what Van Graan has done over the last couple of years. And it's a funny one. I could see from his perspective why he'd be like, well, I came in halfway through a campaign, which is, you know, very rare in rugby. You see it in soccer all the time. It doesn't really happen in rugby. So he got half a campaign, got it into a semi-final in both tournaments, and only lost to Leinster by a point. And, you know, they got maybe beaten a bit more by Racing, but that was a very good, strong start. Then two more semi-finals in year two. Year three, then, there's a kind of a global pandemic, and they also had Racing and Saracens in their pool, which was, a very difficult pool, too. So, and he could maybe point to a few mitigating factors there, but the proof is that they are not really any closer to winning a trophy than they were when they took over. And a point that Keane makes that I think is maybe a valid one as well is that, you know, what's their style of play? Like, it's kind of like, do they want to be a real power team, like a South African style power team, and kick a lot of ball, you know, use the box kick a lot? But they don't seem to be like got adept at doing that anymore. Like the box kicking in particular came in for a lot of criticism against Leinster, but you saw when Saracens did it, like, you know, 2 weeks later, if it's done and executed well, it can be very effective and put teams under a lot of pressure. The issue with Munster was that they weren't executing it well. Mm-hmm. And what was the plan B? And the Stephen Larkin point as well is extremely interesting. Obviously, when he came in, people were hoping it would be similar to like Stuart Lancaster's impact at Leinster, getting them play more expansive rugby. That really hasn't been the case thus far. Now you would think, is there a case of, is he being allowed to do all he wants to do, or is Johan van Graan saying work within this framework? That remains to be seen. Like, there's a lot of pressure on van Graan, even more so when you have such a big name as your assistant. You kind of maybe think back to when Warren Gatland, you know, you would notice, Reggie, during his time with Ireland, and Eddie O'Sullivan was brought in as an attack coach. Yeah. And eventually it became very clear that maybe the two of them couldn't coexist, and some people wanted Eddie O'Sullivan to come in with maybe that kind of attacking idea as the main man. Like, I think there's a lot of pressure there, and a similar maybe dynamic developing as people ask the question more and more, why aren't we seeing Stephen Larkham's, you know, blueprint or fingerprint on this team? That'll be something I think to watch out for. And I really do think it starts today with this game. It's a very tough game away to Scarlets, who picked a very strong team. If they go down this weekend, the murmurs start, because it's only been 2 or 3 weeks since they were knocked out of the Pro 14 by Leinster. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops.
Well, I think it's a very valid point that you raise. I mean, how long is he given? I understand what you're saying, the points about coming in halfway through a season, and unquestionably he's had difficult times in terms of, you know, COVID and other things that have happened along the way. It's been a very tough task for him to take it on. But Munster is a huge franchise, and the fans and Irish sporting media in general expect from Munster. That's always been the way. They expect. And it's not delivering, and I suppose they're the first ones to hold up their hands and say that it's not delivering. But they've done what was needed in bringing in quality coaching staff. Everybody was crying out for it. They've got it now. And I suppose you really do need to see the effects of that coaching staff on the field. So, as you say, it's crucial today. It's crucial for the next 2 or 3 games that they show a style of play and almost green shoots of what the fans can expect for the future in these first few games. But if people see more of the same old, it might be the writing on the wall then.
Yeah, and an interesting thing was Van Graan had his kind of pre-season press conference there during the week when he talked to the journalists. And he went out of his way to name check a couple of these young, exciting talents that Munster do have. Because anyone who's followed Ireland under-20s the last 2 seasons, they won a Grand Slam in 2019 and were 3 from 3 this year before the pandemic came in. For the first time in a long time, there was a huge Munster contingent in these teams. Like players like John Hodden at the back row, who's really good with the ball in hand. Thomas O'Hearn, the second row, another guy. Craig Casey, the scrum half, who is playing today, but probably only because Conor Murray is injured. Mm. And that's the thing. He name-checked these guys, but then you look at the starting team. None of them are really involved, bar Casey or even Hodnett. He said that Hodnett would be close to our European matchday squad. But he's not in the matchday squad today, and he's someone that I think people would really like to see. So I think he's a little conservative about, you know, bringing in some of these younger players, and I'd be interested to see if they do get a run, because the same guys have been broadly around for, and I'm not saying to ditch some of these experienced internationals en masse or anything like that, but what Leo Cullen has been very smart about doing is integrating young players in a squad where there's a lot of senior men still there, so they're not being thrown in at the deep end with just, you know, a very inexperienced squad in the big game. But
kind of drip feeding them in, you know, someone playing at hooker like Ronan Kelleher with like Keen Healy on one side, 5 Furlong on the other, and 2 experienced second rows behind him. So he has a really experienced core. Mm. I don't really see Ben Grant doing that. And you look at someone like Peter O'Mahony, who in his Munster career has yet to lift a trophy and has lost 2 finals and 10 semi-finals across the 2 competitions over the last 10 years. Like, they've been very, very close. They haven't got over the line. And for me, this season is make or break for Ben Grant. I know he's 2 years on his contract, but if they don't win a trophy this year and it's the same old story, I don't really see why you could go again to the same, with the same coaching core. You might look to promote Larkham. You might look, I know there's been maybe whispers, would Ronan O'Gara be tempted to come back and give it a go? I know Munster fans anyway would be on board with that. He's really put in a strong apprenticeship. Like, he's more experienced probably than Johan Ben Grant had, and more success anyway as an assistant coach. So there's a lot of things. Probably the most interesting story provincial-wise going into the season, so it'll be really one to watch.
Yeah, I'm absolutely looking forward to seeing how it unfolds. And hopefully Munster can find their way back to a style of rugby that is what it was, and intimidating as it used to be for teams to come and play against. The other team, of course, in action last night was Ulster, as they managed to get the job done against Benetton, but it was a pretty rocky sort of a game at times, and I think they're another team under pressure too. I know McFarland has been kind of given a little bit of a honeymoon period, but you know, they're talking big things in Ulster, and I think they need to really deliver this season.
Yeah, like, so McFarland, you know, you've kind of been in for 2 years now with Ulster. He obviously inherited a team that was in a very bad place for Armfield and off the field reasons. Like, if you look at the brass tacks, he got them to a Pro 14 semi-final and a Champions Cup quarter-final in year one, and a Pro 14 final and a Champions Cup quarter-final in year two. I suppose the disappointing thing for Ulster, insofar as it's been a very successful 2 years, is that when they have gotten to those big crunch knockout games, they've been a good bit off as yet. They got hammered by Glasgow last year in the Pro 14 semi-final. I know they beat Edinburgh with like a 10-minute burst at the end, but they were really second best for long periods there too, and then they were badly beaten by Leinster. And then in the quarter-final this year against Toulouse, they were a good bit off. But I still think they're moving in the right direction. I think they've recruited really well. They haven't been afraid to, you know, bring in players, you know, a lot of them from Leinster who've made big impacts. They've brought in some good overseas signings as well. I'd be pretty happy if I was an Ulster fan with where they're going. I know John Cooney's form dipped a little bit over the last couple of weeks, and considering how influential he had been up to now, that could be the difference between them winning a Pro 14 title or taking a big scalp away from home in Europe, because he was even dropped, you know, as we know, for that Pro 14 final. Given that he was probably man of the match in every big win they had over the previous 2 years, that was a huge statement. And I'll be interested to see how he bounces back from that, because that's a real big knock for a player who probably did more than anyone to get them to that stage. Mm. But I think, to be honest, if I have to assess them bluntly, I'd say they are a Champions Cup quarter-final team and a Pro 14 semi-final team, and I don't think they are a step above that just yet. They're probably them and Munster will probably be in around the same place. Munster maybe slightly ahead, but I still think they're a good bit off Leinster. Like, Jordy Murphy, you know, isn't even in the Ireland squad. It wasn't even in the Ireland squad for the Six Nations, which says a lot about how far down he slipped down the pecking order. Mm. Marcel Cassie, great player, but he's injured quite a lot. You know, so there's a lot of reasons to be positive, but I still feel like they're probably in and out touching their ceiling as is. But we'll see how they go this year. It's still a work in progress.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, the other team I want to talk about, and sometimes they don't get enough airtime, is, of course, Connacht. And there's another massively juicy encounter today where they're at home at 5:15 to Glasgow, because, you know, it's a really strong Connacht team, also a strong Glasgow team taking them on. And I suppose Connacht, they did so well in 2016, and they came of age almost, and there was all this progression, and, you know, the West is awake and everything else, but then they kind of have gone off the boil since, and I think they need a big season this year.
Yeah, like, it's funny you mentioned 2016. That was probably one year where the league as a whole felt like a proper, you know, pulsing league with a lot at stake, when you had a team, a kind of a fairy tale team like Connacht go on a run, you know, and beat Glasgow on back-to-back weekends, and then go and beat Leinster to the final, and it felt like a coming moment. It kind of went back to business as usual shortly thereafter, but as you say, it's a funny one. Like, Connacht have only really played one proper hit out, you know, given the nature of where their season was at, and it was against Ulster at the Aviva Stadium, and they looked really, really good and beat Ulster quite well. I know it was only maybe 5 points in it at the scoreboard at the end, but people like Kieran Mannion had a great game.
Yeah.
Big season for him coming up. In another world, he could be for Saracens this year. I know he was close to signing before the salary cap stuff came out. Bundyaki was brilliant as well. Alex Wooten, the new signing from Munster, he was really sharp too. So I'm really interested to see how they go today. And I know they have one or two signings. You know, a guy from Australian Sevens, his name is escaping me, and the big number eight, Abraham Papaili, who got sent off on his debut, but looks like a big carrier as well to add to that pack.
Mm.
I think if they win today, it could be an interesting season.
Yes.
I make them dark horses to have a decent season. I know it was only one game, and it was after a pandemic layoff of 6 months, but they really impressed me against Ulster. They looked like a far sharper, better team. It was kind of the old kind we associate with that league-winning team with the ball in hand.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to see how they go today, because Glasgow picked a very strong attacking team as well.
Mm.
It could be a good high-scoring game if the weather and Galway plays ball, which, as we know, is rare enough. But I'm interested to see if they win today, if it can be a bit of a springboard for them. Because there's a couple of guys like Jack Carthy as well, who kind of fell off the radar after the World Cup.
That's right.
And is probably a bit away from the Ireland pecking order now. I'm quietly confident that they could have a good year, and I think it'll start today. Much like Munster, I think it's a bit riding on this opening game.
Yeah, let's hope you're right. Will, as always, been great chatting to you. Thanks for all that, and we'll chat to you again very soon.
Cheers, Roger. Thanks.
That's Will Slattery there, of course, of the Irish Independent and the Left Wing podcast. Give it a listen. Some great chats there on rugby, if that's your game. Time to turn our attention to GAA now. Delighted to be joined on the line by our own Declan Drake. Good morning, Declan. How are you?
Hi, Reg. How you doing?
I do great, thanks, Declan. Well, you called it last week. Ballymun was your prediction. You just felt that they had a little bit going for them, and you weren't wrong, as it turned out. They got the result.
They got the result, yeah. I was only wrong in the margin of it, really.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone could have foreseen that, to be honest with you. I mean, after 10 minutes, it was 4 points apiece. The contest was bubbling up nicely into the game we hoped it would be. But then Ballymun just put their foot on the accelerator and sped away at an alarming pace. 10 points in a row to lead by 10 at half-time. Game over as a contest. And you could just sit back and watch the champagne football that they were playing in the second half as well. Okay, the scoring rate naturally enough dropped, but it was overall, it was a fantastic performance and a super way to win their first county title since 2012.
Yeah, absolutely. All powerful on the day, as it turned out. You managed to catch up with James McCarthy afterwards. Let's have a little listen to that.
Congratulations, county champions for the first time since 2012, and that was as emphatic a display as we've seen in a long, long time.
Yeah, we left our best performance at last, I suppose, which is brilliant, you know. And it just shows the kind of quality we have in the team. We're a boost by some of the young lads this year, like, and they really come on. We're training together 4 or 5 months. It's been absolutely brilliant, you know.
Going to bed last night, you couldn't have envisaged a county final to go so well for the team, and you kept them scoreless in the 10th minute of the first half to roughly midway through the second half. But that burst of 10 points that you got yourselves laid the platform.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, like, we weren't going to come here and sit back and admire them. Like, we wanted to go on and play in the front foot and push up everywhere. And we played front foot football, we squeezed the kickouts, got loads of joy off, and we just said we're going to go for it and attack the game and play the brilliant first half, and that just gave us the cushion, you know.
People might have said this team has, you know, underperformed really over the years in terms of the number of titles on the board, 2012 since the last one. Well, that was an emphatic answer to that today, wasn't it?
No, absolutely, and there's no doubt we did underachieve. Like, we got to a couple of other county finals. Other years we were just terrible, really, with the players we had, and myself and all the other lads to take blame for it as well. You know, maybe our heads weren't in the right place at times, so we really wanted to win the second one, you know, because I just think the team was good enough to do it. And we said there, we got together a couple months ago, we're going to give this a proper crack. And we won the league final last year. People don't really know about it. It was a big game for us at the time. And we actually bet Ballybowden as well. So it's just great. Great, yeah.
Before I let you go and join the lads, I saw Paul Curran in the stand there earlier on, who was, of course, your manager in 2012 when you won it last. He took you to a Leinster title that year as well. Unfortunately, it's not an experience you're going to have this year. Is there an element of regret, perhaps, in that?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, just suppose the year that's in, unfortunately. Maybe there'll be somewhere, I don't know, I heard some rumours, maybe it might go ahead, I don't know, but it'd be great if it did, but obviously I don't think it is. So look, we just got, it was big to win this championship, and we'll try and win it again next year and get that crack. I'd love to have a crack at it.
Yeah, James McCarthy there catching up with you after the game, and very honest as well to say that, you know, maybe they did underperform in the past, but on this occasion they timed it well in the season and kept their best performance to last.
Absolutely, yeah, and it's a point we made in the programme last week and in previous weeks when reviewing Ballymun's progress in the championship as well. They had underachieved. I mean, one title since 2012. with the quality of players that they have in their squad, just wasn't good enough. And as you say, James was honest enough to admit it there. But I tell you, they certainly delivered on it in some style last week. And it's more the pity that there isn't a club championship this year, because they would certainly have gone some distance in it, I would have felt. But congratulations to them. It was a tremendous victory. And particularly for the Smalls, Paddy and John as well. Of course, they lost their father at the beginning of the year as well, who was the chairman of the club. So there's great scenes of emotion in Parnell Park when the trophy was presented by the county board chairman, Mick Sievers, last Sunday afternoon.
Excellent stuff. And speaking of Mick Sievers, of course, there's plenty of changes happening, future structure and schedules around club and inter-county fixtures. And again, you caught up with Mick Sievers during the week. Let's have a listen to that interview.
Yeah, when you think back to March, where there were no games, and then we moved it on to June, the possibility, and it was a fluid situation all through the season. Thankfully, we've had some outstanding matches in the last 7 or 8 days. And yeah, it's great. The performance that finished it off today was first class.
COVID has done probably one thing for us this year. It's refocused our thinking on the structures of games. Normally, these lads would be absolutely knackered after a long year with Dublin, coming back to play club at this time of the year. But it's role reversal for them this year. And food for thought for the future, perhaps, if it can be done.
Absolutely. For the association, out of adversity comes an opportunity. I think the split season is here to stay. It's how we manage it. I would trust our Crow Park and all the corporates and all would sit in on this and come up with the proper decision. My personal thinking is that if we go with club early on and then we move into the July, August, September, we go inter-county. I think the big benefit for inter-county in September is the school's return, and we would have a platform there to promote our games in the schools.
A great platform to come back to on the 17th of October when Meath come here 6 months after the original game.
Yeah, if you think it's busy now, the 17th of October, we've three county teams. We've the minor team playing. We're in a 20 semi-final. And then we're back here that night against Meath. Hopefully we can get all the games carried out and finished. But yeah, exciting times ahead.
Are you hopeful at all, Michael, that we may have supporters here on October the 17th? I know it's just a few weeks away yet. It's about a week or so after the current restrictions are due to be lifted.
I'd appeal to everybody that's involved with Gaelic games to really, really play their part in it. It's a fluid situation. It could go either way. And I think if we make a contribution to it, I would be hopeful that we can get some supporters back in whatever numbers. But certainly that would be a good step.
Yeah, that's the new Dublin GA chairman, Mick Sievers, talking about the future, caught up with you, Declan, during the week. And, you know, it's certainly, maybe it's a little bit wishful thinking, hoping about the supporters coming back in, but certainly a packed calendar coming up on the 17th.
Absolutely, no doubt about it. And as you said, there are three teams in action in the one day, hopefully. And but it's just great. I mean, I have to congratulate the CCC in Dublin, Reg, for the way they run off the championship so efficiently this year. It was great to see it. Great enthusiasm from all the clubs. Great to see the inter-county players playing regularly with their clubs. I think we saw the benefit of it in one of the best county championships in a number of years. So definitely, I think, food for thought there. Hopefully some structure can be put in place that the club scene can be more accommodated next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's hope that that's the case. Now, during the week, of course, there was the announcement of one of the most decorated and, from a Dublin point of view, most liked footballers that ever took the field in a blue jersey. He has detractors maybe from other counties, but that's for reasons of his brilliance on the pitch. But Dermot Connolly announcing his retirement from inter-county football during the week.
Yeah, sad to see that. What a man, what a footballer. I would say the best footballer I've ever seen play the game. And that's saying something, because I've been watching the game a long time now, Reg. Mm. So naturally gifted, so audacious. He thinks about things that people just can't think about. And more importantly, he does things that people can't do either. I mean, there's so many examples of it over the years. I would say if it was to pick one event, the 2014 All-Ireland Club Final for Vincent's against Castlebar Mitchells. He scored 2-5 that day. He absolutely bamboozled the Mayo men. It wasn't the first time in his career he did, of course, but that was a fantastic show. And look, all you can do is stand back, take your hat off and say, well done, Dermot, on your success. Thank you very much for the memories. And I'm sure you'll continue to play with St. Vincent's. I look forward to watching him at club level in football and maybe even hurling next year, because he was quite a hurler as well.
I wasn't aware of that. I didn't realise he played hurling as well. That'd be interesting to see. Yeah, I mean, you know, as you say, there's no question on the pitch. He was like one of the greatest that ever put on that blue jersey. And he's sort of the backbone of a team that just sort of dragged Dublin back from a little bit in the wilderness, let's say, to go on and become the powerhouse that they are.
Yeah, he was very fortunate to be part of the golden generation. Perhaps he didn't play it as fully as he would have liked himself, you know, with some of the incidents that happened to him on the pitch over the years, which led to suspension. But I tell you know, if he was a substitute in Croke Park or anywhere else and you were in trouble and you saw him warming up, he'd strike fear into the hearts of the opposition and he would give you confidence that you could go on and win the game yourself. So people like that don't come around too often, Rich.
That's for sure. And huge tribute to him and everything that has gone on in a blue jersey. One of the absolute legends, and will always be remembered that. Dermot Connolly there, retiring from intercounty football this week. Now, the ladies' championship dates have been released as well. What are they?
Yeah, we're playing, I think, it's October the 31st against Donegal, a Dublin venue to be fixed, and then the following week away to Waterford. That's the intercounty scene. The club scene, we must, first of all, congratulate Ballinteer St. John's. They qualified for the Leinster Junior semi-final this afternoon against Ballymore of Longford. Great game on Tuesday night. They're out this afternoon, as I say, so good luck to them. A little bit of controversy surrounding the seniors in Foxhawk Cabin Teely. They were due to start the defence of their Leinster club title on tomorrow afternoon in Dunboyne at 2 o'clock. But there was an incident of COVID there in the camp, I believe, during the week in Meath, and the game was postponed for tomorrow. But since has been awarded to Foxhawk Cabin Teely, who now advance to the Leinster final next weekend. But that's subject to appeal. So I don't know why there wasn't a refixture discussed or agreed in that particular case, but it's a little bit of a messy situation at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose COVID is going to cause all of those issues, but that is a strange one, how they wouldn't just reschedule the game. I don't know, maybe they're just worried about backlog of fixtures or something, but I don't know.
Well, it's a tight schedule. I mean, the Leinster final is fixed for next Sunday. Then the county players are back training as well, and you have to try and complete the club championships. But that's the amazing thing about the ladies in both ladies football and in Camogie as well, Reg, that they have provincial and All-Ireland club championships. Yeah. We don't in the men's game, which is, as we've said over the last couple of weeks, very very disappointing from Coolas' point of view and Ballymun Kickhams as well.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, plenty still to look forward to as we go towards the intercounty stuff in October. So that's plenty to look forward for the rest of this month. Okay, Declan, been great catching up with you. We'll catch up with you again next week.
Please, God, Reg. Take care.
That's Declan Drake there giving us all the rundown on the GAA. Delighted to be joined on the line now by Alan Cawley. Good morning, Alan.
Morning, Reggie. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. All well here. And enjoying everything that's going on at home in football, and certainly Rovers not letting anything slip. A great performance from them last night, getting 4-0 victory. And let's have a listen to what Stephen Bradley had to say after the game.
In patches, we were very good. I was really pleased, and we were ruthless in the final third, because they're the dangerous team. I think they showed that in glimpses tonight. They have really good attacking players. They're quick, strong, and they're good in transition. I think they're the most dangerous team in the league in transition. So you have to really be ready to run. And I thought we did that really well. Yeah, well, when I came in, I think we have to remember we were fighting for fourth place, and we were hoping someone won the cup so we get into Europe. And every year we've said we don't want to be near that. We want to go again, and we've improved every year. We're on the cusp of winning it. We need another win or two. We know that. We can see how important it is to win the league, because of the draw in Europe, how important it can be for you. You can get a really, really kind draw, and it can really be helpful. So we know how important it is to get it over the line.
Yeah, Stephen Bradley realising the importance of performance the whole way through the campaign, week in, week out. And certainly no slippage in performance last night. Burnick as well, getting on the score sheet, 4-0. Very, very solid from Rovers, the only way you can describe it.
Yeah, they're relentless at this stage, Reggie, and scoring plenty of goals, playing really well. And I think the word he used there in the interview was ruthless. Mm. And that's exactly what they were last night, because when the chances came, they buried them. And obviously Jack got one, Graham Burke. And it was just a good team performance all around. Probably didn't hit the heights that they normally can, but they were still very, very good. And the one thing that really kind of impressed me, Reggie, being there, was the fact that even at 3-4-0, they never let up. They kept going. And I suppose the sign of all the good teams is just to have that desire and that hunger, and to just keep pressing. And when they have the opposition down, they just don't let them up. And they've been brilliant all season, to be fair to Shamrock Rovers. They're the best team by a mile. They are going to win the league, and it'll be fully deserved, because they've played some brilliant stuff. I think that's 18 goals in their last 4 or 5 games. So They've been outstanding, to be fair to them, Reg.
Yeah, absolutely, and they deserve it. It's been a long time coming, and there's been a lot of work going on to get it to this point, and we've said that many times on this show, the work that's going on at academy level and coaching and everything else that they've done to tee it up. But they're starting to get the bear the fruits of that now.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's in fairness to Stephen Bradley. He would have came under a lot of fire and a lot of criticism maybe in the first couple of years, and I know myself I would have been critical at times, but he stuck it out, and to be fair to the board, they, whether by luck or by design, but they stuck it out with him as well, Reggie, and even the fans I know were very critical at one point, and he was probably borderline whether he was going to stay in the job or not. But it's been proved right to stick with him now, and as you say, look at what they're developing, obviously with the academy as well. Also to have a team in the first division, which I think is brilliant for the development of young players also. So everything is very positive for Shamrock Rovers at the moment. And when you look around at maybe some of the other clubs and the other teams, there's a fear now that they could go on and dominate. I know obviously Dundalk, which we talk about, had the brilliant result, and the finances that's going to come their way will massively help. But at the moment, if you were looking at the two teams and the clubs, I would say Shamrock Rovers are very much ahead of Dundalk right now.
Absolutely. Okay, well, it's speaking of Dundalk, it's been a great week for them, and a very interesting reading in the Independent. Daniel McDonald is talking about the fact that the Dundalk Finn Harps game will now be interrupting the Spanish Truffle and Beer Festival that's going on over in Italy, in the hometown of Giovagnoli, and that's the level of interest that's going on. The League of Ireland stream going to be shown there live to the village people in the middle of their festival. So that's an interesting angle on it all, to show the interest that's come in Italy in League of Ireland on the back of the performances that's happened. But Dundalk getting that result during the week and getting into this group now with the likes of Arsenal and Rapid Vienna and Molde, it's really a fairy tale type story.
So absolutely, Reggie, yeah, and I suppose we need all the new people we can get into the league. So if there's interest from anywhere in any corner of Italy, we welcome it with open arms, Reggie.
Yeah.
But no, the manager has done very well since he's come in. Obviously, there was a lot of scepticism around him and no experience. But to be fair to him, I think he's handled himself really well and very dignified since the day he came in. And they've been lucky enough with the draw, let's be honest, Reggie. Stephen Bradley mentioned it there even in his interview, that if you were to win the league and you go through the Champions route, and you get knocked out of the Champions League, it gives you a kinder draw when you drop down to the Europa League. And that's exactly what happened on Dundalk. And that's the route for Irish clubs, realistically as well, Reggie, if we are to progress in Europe, because the chances of progressing in the Champions League are slim. But if you go the Champions route and you're seeded and you drop down into the Europa League and you're automatically into the second round playoff and win a match and you're in the third round with the chances of getting maybe a weaker opposition like we saw with Dundalk, and that's, people will say, look, they were lucky, and they were, but you make your own luck in terms of that draw as well, and that they were the champions that dropped down. So they're there on merit. They made hard work of the game on Thursday night. The Faroese team, I thought, were weak enough, I have to say. We built them up a little bit before the match, but they were weak. But when they went 2-0 down, they responded really well, and Dundalk were hanging on a little bit until they got the breakaway goal. But it's unbelievable for them, really. And of all the years to make a breakthrough in Europe, this is the one to do it, Reggie, with all the uncertainty around finances and all that kind of thing as well. And obviously there's huge money to come their way now, and not only in qualification but with the draws you mentioned as well. Obviously the Arsenal games are going to be really, really difficult, and you wouldn't expect them to be picking up points there. But against Rapid Vienna and Molde, there's a realistic chance that you may pick up points, and I think it's something like 590 grand for a win in the group and 190 grand for a draw. So it just goes to show the money and obviously all the everything that that offers now for them, and the opportunities it opens up for them, and for the league as well. It's a massive plus as well, and good publicity, which is always welcome also.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, long may it continue for them, and hope that they can do well. It's a big week for Ireland, and Stephen Kenny has kind of got an anxious weekend ahead of him, waiting to see how certain players that he would have been watching you know, manage this weekend. I know he'd be looking at the likes of Coleman, Doherty, Hendrick, Hourihan, even like from a goalkeeper point of view, Darren Randolph. He'd probably be playing Thursday night, but he won't be playing for West Ham. So it's a strange sort of time for him. But, like, you know, as things stand, they haven't done well, really, in the National League. Just 2 points in the first two, or 1 point from the first two games. But Thursday is absolutely crucial, and the pressure on for Stephen already.
Yeah, it's a massive game, Reggie. We'll all be glued to it, obviously, Thursday night. And as you say, he probably does have a worrying weekend, because, unusually enough, the way the games are staggered now, We're seeing games Saturday, Sunday, Monday, but tomorrow all the games are going to be played together rather than the Monday games. And I think there's 11 out of the squad involved in the games tomorrow. And then obviously you're hoping that they'll come through unscathed, and then you meet up on Monday, or even some of them will fly in Sunday night. Doesn't give much preparation on Monday. Then they'll probably be flying out Tuesday after training, and then you're getting ready for the game Thursday. So logistically, it can be a bit of a problem as well, and hopefully we don't pick up injuries. But definitely the game is absolutely massive. But I don't think Stephen Kenny's reign or anything like that hinges on this game, Reggie. Like, yep. It's only his third game, to be fair to him.
Yep.
Obviously, we'd love to qualify. Of course, we'd love to qualify. Everyone wants that. Stephen himself wants that. But this is something that's going to be a long-term thing. You can't just be turning around if he was to lose on Thursday night or get defeated, that we all of a sudden you rip up the plan and say, no, he's not the man for the job now. So he has to be given that time. But of course, they'll be going into the game and hoping to win. We all want to see them win. But I don't think his reign will hinge on the game Thursday night.
Absolutely agree with that. I think he has to be given the time. Is there any selection issues that you think he might come out with that will be surprising, or will he go kind of to form, do you think?
I think he'll probably stick to form, but obviously the big one, the big debate that we all know is Seamus or Matt at the moment, and the two of them are playing so well. Seamus has had such a brilliant start to the season with Everton, and you look at the praise Ancelotti was giving him last week, it was unbelievable, to be fair. And that's probably more not just of his performances on the pitch, that's probably more a case of what he brings off the pitch as well and his professionalism, Reggie, because the likes of Ancelotti and the Italians are big on that stuff. So Seamus has impressed him, no doubt. And he'll come into the team. I think Seamus will be back in the team. But that doesn't mean Matt will miss out. I think the two of them can play together in the team. And I think Matt will play ahead of Seamus, probably in the attacking three. I think he'll stick with the three in the middle with McCarthy, Hendrick and Horahan. Horahan chipping in with goals last week for Villa as well. And McCarthy's done well at Crystal Palace at the start of the season also. And I think Matt Doherty will play as one of the attacking three with Connolly and McGoldrick. So I think he'll stick to the likes of that. The defence should be the same as well. With Egan and Duffy and obviously Enda Stevens. So I think the only one is probably the debate around Seamus and Matt. But for me, it's not a debate. Seamus is the foreign player. He was right to pick Matt in the last games because Matt was the foreign player. And I think that's the way it should go, Reggie. But I still think Matt will be in the team because since the start of the season with Spurs, particularly last week against Southampton, he's settling in nicely and he played well against Southampton. And he can play as one of those attacking players as well, no problem.
Obviously very difficult going away from home. But how would you rate the opposition?
Yeah, Slovakia are very good, Reggie. It's going to be a difficult tie. They were unlucky not to come through. I think they finished on the same amount of points as we did. They finished third in their group as well. Hamzik is back in the squad too, and they've been a brilliant player that plays for Inter Milan, Skriniar. The goalkeeper is Dubravka, also that plays at Newcastle, a good goalkeeper. And I think there might be a question mark whether he's fit, but it's going to be a tough ask. Like, let's be honest, like we... No matter who we play, like we have no divine right to go out and beat anyone, Reggie, or take anyone lightly. Let's be honest about it. So it's going to be a tough ask. I'm sure Stephen kind of inwardly will fancy his chances with the team as well, but I'm sure Slovakia are fancying their chances. So it's going to be a tough game, a tough ask. But as I say, hopefully Stephen will come through. Even though we got the defeats in the Nations League games, by all accounts, things were really positive in terms of the message getting across and what Stephen wants to implement to the group and to the squad. So hopefully that'll bear a bit more fruition this week when he spends a bit more time with them. And also, remember, Reggie, they're playing the two games after this as well in the Nations League, so that gives them even more time to spend with the squad as well, because he's had very, very little time with them, and he can't even go over to England to watch games, or
it's not tough.
Like he's going over kind of meeting them and communicating, meeting them face-to-face or anything like that. I'd say a lot of his conversations are probably phone calls or Zoom calls, which can be awkward enough as well. So it's going to be, as I say... Like, and if it means there's going to be short term pain for long term gain, I've no problem with that, Reggie, because we have to change. We've only qualified for three major tournaments in 20 years. Things have to change in terms of how we play. And as I say, Stephen will be the right man, I think, to change that. But of course, it's going to take time.
Absolutely. Okay, very quickly, who have we got on Cawley's call this week?
David McMillan, Dundalk centre forward, is going to come in and join us to tell us all about the bonus money that he's about to pick up, Reggie.
See if you can get a bit of it off him, will you?
Yeah, and we're going to try and get you a ticket for the Arsenal game as well, Reggie. All the years of pain, we have to try and get to Viva.
That would be something else, I have to say. Fair play to you. All right, Alan.
Try and work something there. Thanks a million, Reggie.
I look forward to talking to you next week. Mind yourself.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Cheers. That's Alan Cawley there. Of course, podcast, Cawley's call going really, really well from as well, but giving us all his insight into the football for this week. And that's all we've got time for this week on the show. It's been great chatting to you, and thank you for listening here on Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Thanks to our producers, Paul Morris and Blaine O'Hara. We'll be back again next Saturday. Take care, stay safe, and have a great week.